Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted, the podcast for those who are done performing, done people pleasing, and done living life on autopilot. I'm your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and this is where we create disruptive, unapologetic transformations for those who are ready to exit survival mode and reclaim their power. Every episode is your permission slip to burn the rule book, break the cycle, and finally build a life that feels like yours. So let's disrupt everything that's holding you back and start living life on your own terms. Welcome to Survival Mode Disrupted. This is your trigger warning. This podcast contains unfiltered conversations about trauma, abuse, and survival. Discretion is advised. This is not therapy or medical advice, just real people sharing real stories. So please take care of yourself and pause if you need to. If this conversation hits home, grab the book Survival Mode Exit Plan, your raw, unapologetic blueprint to break free. Available now by scanning the QR code or clicking the link in the comments. Hello, 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 and welcome back to another episode of Survival Mode Disrupted. This is your host, Leticia, the Survival Mode Disruptor, and this week I have Louisa here, and I cannot wait to have this conversation. Louisa, why don't you introduce yourself?
Thank you. I am Louisa Anderson. I reside in Austin, Texas. I am a podcaster. I co-host a podcast, Flying Upstream, in which we focus about all of the unconventional, all of the different paths that people walk in life. And we really just try to highlight the do-gooders, people who are out here also sharing their message, sharing their story in order to enlighten other people and encourage them to walk their own path as well. My story is sort of a little long, but I can say that since before I was born, there was trauma because my mother, of course, as I have understood the story over the years because I wasn't born yet, but the day my mother found out that she was pregnant with me was the same day that my father was leaving the country to come to the United States. And my father sent a very clear message that day, and that was that his financial wellness and everything that he was coming to pursue in the United States, a better life for himself, was much more important than me. And so he did, in fact, leave that day, and I wouldn't actually meet my father until I was about 3 years old when he came back to visit the country after he had left. My mother, in the other hand, she, as a young person, she was a teen mom in a third world country. So my father was sort of a means to an end to her. My father's family had status and they had money and they had resources that my mother's family could only dream of at the time. So for my mother, I was a golden ticket, but for my father, I was getting in the way of the bright future his family had secured for him. And as the story goes, you know, once my mother had me as a 17-year-old, she realized that she was a 17-year-old. And she realized that she didn't want to have children. And she, at about 3 months old, which is, I have my own two children, but that's about the time when, you know, traditionally it's okay to leave your newborn. And most of us go back to work, or most of us, you know, whatever at that time, but that bond is not the same beyond that point. And my mother did just that. She left and she went to, I still don't actually fully know the whole story about where she went to, but she went to live her life. She left the city and she went to a completely different part of our island that we're from. And she just lived her life and left me with my grandmothers. And as the pictures tell it, and as I remember little bits and pieces of my story, I was just bounced back to whichever grandmother could have me. Well, whichever grandmother had the time and resources to take care of me. And I remember there's this picture of me, and I think I'm about 1.5 years old, and I was the cutest, puffiest little girl. I was so cheeky. But I remember in that picture, I was wearing these beautiful dress. And I asked my grandmother one time before she passed, and I said, you know, what about all these beautiful dresses that I keep showing up in all these pictures with? And my grandmother said, well, your dad made sure that you had the best of everything. And that was a theme in my life, a pattern that I just recently, at the age of 37 years old, broke. It just recently came into my awareness about 2 years ago. And it took 2 years of internal work for me to finally break that cycle. The cycle of it looks good on the outside, but on the inside, it's not worth the paper it's printed on, sort of saying. And then at some point, because it had to look good, my father's family convinced him that he needed to bring me to the United States so that I could live with him, because my father's family was, you know, very well-to-do in society in our city. And, you know, one of their children, you know, a grandchild, that could not be not taken care of and not presented the same way that the rest of the family was. So they brought me over to the United States, and I grew up with my father for most of my childhood until I left at the age of 17. But my father was a young bachelor. He was 19 years old. He had gone to the United States. His family was smart enough, as soon as they got here, invested in real estate, and he was doing financially amazing. And what, you know, 19, I think maybe 22, 23 years old. Let's see. Well, I was 6 years old, so he was 25 years old. Bachelor with financial well-being wants to tote around a little girl that he doesn't even know. And so my care really landed on my aunts. And thankfully, my father has a huge family. My father is one of 13, and all of them have at the very least 2 children. Most have 3 to 6 children. So I landed in this community of my father's family, whom I didn't really know, because most of them had been living in the United States since I was born or since before I was born. And I immediately felt like an outsider. And the only thing as a child that I could distinguish as different was that I didn't have a mother, because the rest of my cousins, 60 plus something of them, they all had a mother. And I experienced a lot of abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, mental abuse, emotional abuse, like just as part of my everyday life, and a lot of neglect at the hands of these aunts and these family members that were supposed to be helping take care of me. And it all came back to me as a child. I remember every time I would cry, the only thought that I would have was, if I had a mother, this wouldn't be happening to me. Yeah. And I really feel like that shaped who I became as a mother. For the most part, I have a 17-year-old son, and he knows mostly that version of me as a mother that was overbearing and so focused only on him. And then my daughter was born 8.5 years later, and I was just solely focused on them. I was in an extremely unhappy marriage. I was extremely unhappy. But that mother wound never would allow me to leave. One, I had the picture of the perfect American family. What does that look like? That's a mom, a dad, the white picket fence, and the 2.5 kids. And I had that. A little untraditionally, but I had that finally. And despite how unhappy I was, and it showed in every way, it showed in my body, it showed in, I didn't really know. I look back and I don't know who that woman was for those 10 plus years, but it was really all part of that mother wound, because I hyper-focused on being the mother to those children that I needed as a child. That's who I became. And my children didn't really need that because I was there and I was present and they were loved. But for me, it really took away from building any other types of relationships that were meaningful. They weren't that important to me. In fact, I told myself that I'd be miserable in my marriage as long as my kids got to have what I didn't have. And I found my journals about a year and a half ago. I had a spiritual awakening, and it was my journal entry from right before my husband of 10 years asked for a divorce. And what to me at the time was like, oh my goodness, I was so blindsided is what it felt like. But I found my journal entry from about a month and a half before he came home and asked for that divorce. And I was just yearning to feel alive. I was yearning to feel loved. I was yearning human connection. I was yearning to just exist in any form other than pain.
Wow. So we spoke prior to recording, and I asked you whether or not you thought you had a mother wound. And there was a pause, and you were like, I know I do. So how would you describe that?
I think without knowing exactly the definition of like how we define a mother wound, what I would describe as my mother wound is my inability to exist in anything outside of fight or flight mode if I didn't prioritize being a mother. It was what, above everything else, above myself, above my self-love, above anything that I may have wanted, any hobbies that I could have pursued, I would describe my mother wound as basically having taken completely over my life and literally blocking my amygdala to where I just existed in trying to prevent my children from experiencing anything that I experienced because I refused to let them be the black sheep that I was in my family. And the only reason I felt like I was that black sheep was because I didn't have a mother. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to be a mother to them in every sense of the best, only the best. Like whatever description anyone had of a mother, I wanted to be to them the best version of that without even acknowledging their needs, to be honest. And so I really think it showed up in my life and just blocked me from my ability to live beyond being a mother. It was like there was no other facet to me. It was all consuming.
And I can relate to that. So listeners, a mother wound is an emotional, psychological, and sometimes physical pain that stems from a woman's relationship with her mother. And it usually shows up in ways of like overachieving, really becoming a helicopter mother when we do have children. It's in the guilt that we carry. We fear being too much, too emotional, and not enough all in the same breath. We tend to be people pleasers, but there's also a deep-rooted trust, mistrust, distrust in other women and mostly ourselves. So when we started this conversation, I said to you, like, I recognize that I too have a mother and mine is different from yours because my mom was present. However, what I experienced for most of my teenage years was emotional neglect. And I don't think it was something that my mother intentionally did, but she chose her family unit, and I was not part of that family unit. She had a new family with her second husband. They had children, and that became the unit that she focused on. So I, because I wasn't in that mix, I got into a lot because my mom, I felt, wasn't giving me what I needed emotionally. And I don't think that she advocated for me in the way that I needed her to. And that's not saying that she didn't advocate for me, but it wasn't in the way that I needed, which then left me feeling empty and really hard for me to build relationships with other females. And I told you, like, it shows up in my life where is if I have an issue with a friend, a female friend, like they are cut. Like it's, I don't have time for this. I don't have capacity for any nonsense from another woman, which I recognize isn't healthy and it's something that I actively work in. So we've spoken about your mother wound. How would that then translate into you being in survival mood?
Ooh, I think it had me absolutely shut out to the possibility or even the awareness, to be honest, that there was another way to live besides living in pain and in sacrifice. I felt like a sacrifice. I told you I went back to my journal entries and I use the term a lot, apparently, sacrificial lamb. It was like I was the sacrifice that I had decided I was going to be the sacrifice in order to break that cycle because I wouldn't leave my children. But it went beyond leaving my children. But to me, there was no middle ground. I was either the best mother, the role model of the best mother, or I was nothing. And it really showed up. You mentioned relationships with other women. And I told you when we were talking before this that I am aware I have a mother wound, but I've never dug deep, as deep as we're getting. So I love this. But you mentioned your relationship with other women, and I have like one childhood female friend, and a lot of people around me find that to be so weird because they have multiple, if not, like a myriad of them. And that one friend that I do still have a relationship with has been because she has continuously over the years, no matter what cycle of life each other is in, continued to reach out to me. Otherwise, I wouldn't have any other female relationships. So I think that's one way that it showed up is relationships to me were very touch and go. It was very, and I have a father wound, so it's different with men, but with the mother wound, it was very like, okay, you're here now, great, but the moment you leave, I'm not going to put any effort into this connection whatsoever. Because if there was the slightest, this you mentioned the mistrust and the distrust, being a result of all of the abuse that I encountered in my childhood and, really putting that all on as a child on the fact that it occurred only because I didn't have a mother, which is obviously not true, but that's how it felt to me for many years. I think that's one way that it showed up. It was in my relationships. I am just now, as a 37-year-old woman, establishing the most beautiful, healthy connections with other women. But these are feelings and experiences that I've never experienced before. These are putting in effort in such a beautiful and loving way that I have never experienced before. And there was always, if there was any hint of distrust, which was really just some wound or something that I hadn't healed in myself, I would just walk away and let that be that. I didn't value people. I didn't value my relationships, and I definitely did not prioritize my marriage because of that mother wound. Because I was a mother first and foremost. I was a wife second. And I can't even sit here and tell you that I even thought third of myself. Probably work was third. And I got my master's degree, so I feel like I was in school forever. And then, you know, school, learning, and all of the other activities related to either my husband, our home, our family life, and obviously my children, and all of the 1,000 activities I felt the need to put them in because they were going to be the best ever. They were not going to grow up feeling like they missed out on anything. That's how I felt. So I felt like I needed to give them that. The beauty is that once I got out of that survival mode, it all changed. I saw the world so different and experienced the world so differently. But I would say those are some of the ways that that mother wound kind of put me and kept me in survival mode for most of my life. I would say for 35 years of my life.
Wow. That's deep because, you know, I also had a reconciliation that I was in survival mode from about 7 until about 35. And it was because there was simply a lack of awareness for me. I couldn't put pieces together, you know, like I had healed from the abuse, or I was on a healing journey as a result of the abuse that I endured in my teenage years. I was learning about a coping strategies and learning how to build boundaries as a result of the toxic relationships that I had. But I spent so much time just really living in autopilot because I really just didn't take control of my life, you know? And then when I did, I'm like, oh, like, what have I been missing here all this time? Because like that radical ownership is huge. Like once you're able, like it changes everything. And you just spoke to that. Once you recognize, once you had that awareness that this is how I was showing up, you were in a space to rectify that. So, you know, listeners, you've heard me say that I believe that there are three phases to exiting survival mode. And the first one is awareness. It gives us so much information that allows us to change our path, allows us to make different decisions, allows us to show up in the world differently. The second is reprogramming. So it's not holding on to the victimhood, not holding on to the circumstances and or the identity that we've become as a result of what we've been through, the narratives that we tell ourselves, like you talked about, you know, you thought you had to do all of these things in order to be a good mother to your children. That was a narrative that was created as a result of your mother being absent, but then you learned something different and you were able to change that narrative, right? And then that last piece is the reinvention. Changing who we identify as, because we aren't our trauma, even though we tend to identify as our trauma very heavily while we are in survival mode.
Yeah, I would totally, I love the three phases. I was writing them down as you were saying them, and I absolutely agree with them. And I wanted to share about awareness. I feel like, you know, you said it so beautifully. It's information. Having that awareness is information about yourself. It's sort of stepping outside and observing yourself, your behaviors, your reaction, your emotions, what's prompting them. Mm-hmm. And really without judgment, because if you do it with judgment, we're not going to get far along the journey there in terms of awareness. And I think that one of the things that tends to happen, though, that holds us back from even that first step that you mentioned, awareness, is fear. Fear tends to tell us that we have to remain in this because this is what we know. This is what we know. And so I think the reprogramming part is that I think that's where the bulk of the work happens. I think I've been in that reprogramming phase for the last 3 years of my life is what it feels like. And that reprogramming phase, that is, I think you said radical ownership. I would put that there. That is taking radical ownership of your behavior. That is you being like, yes, I know that when this action happens, for example, that when my kid falls off the bike while they're learning to ride, I freak out and I just want to tell them to just don't even worry about riding a bike. You don't need to, you're not going to need a bike ever. So don't worry about it. You know, I know that's my natural reaction, but what am I actually going to do or say the next time my kid falls off the bike as they're learning? And that's your responsibility. Mm-hmm. It is our responsibility to say to ourselves, when that happens next time, this is how I am going to react. Or at the very least, this is how I am not going to react. Because we have to take control. Otherwise, who is in control? Mm-hmm. You know, and I really feel like that reprogramming phase can be so painful. And when I think about staying in survival mode, I think that that's where a lot of people make the choice to stay in survival mode, because it can be so painful. And then, like you said, we tend to identify a lot as our trauma, completely guilty here. And then we're just like, okay, fine. Yeah, I just, you know, I was abused and I have a mother wound and there's a lot of trauma in my childhood. And then that's that. But in reality, the next phase that you mentioned, the reinvention, is where the beauty happens, because you get to decide that you're not what happened to you. You are what you choose to become. And I think that's Carl Jung, his quote. But it's so true and impactful. You are not what happened to you. That happened, yes. And I would never take that away from anyone. Whether it's the mother wound, whether it's the father wound, any abuse, any neglect, you don't take that from anyone, right? I wouldn't dare. But what we do with it is what matters. That's where we get to enact change. And change, I believe, in my own personal journey and my own personal experience, how you change the outside is by changing your inside and working on yourself first. Mm-hmm. You change you first, and then there's people like us who then we're like, okay, we're going to impact the collective. We're going to start a podcast and talk about it and make sure everybody hears it, because it is so important to move from that survival mode into a mode of creation. We get to recreate ourselves and become mm-hmm. whoever we want. And that is the beauty that we're giving. That is the gift that we get to have, is that we get to shape our lives. And that reinvention phase, as scary as it can be, because I feel like I'm in it right now, and it can feel scary because sometimes I wake up and I look at myself in the mirror and I'm like, I'm so freaking gorgeous. Or I'm in the middle of something difficult, you know, a difficult situation, and I'm like, I am so strong and I can handle this, and this too shall pass. Mm-hmm. But it's scary because I've never talked to myself like that before. Like, I have never consistently until recently talked to myself like that. And so who is this like new person and this woman who is empowered and who's not going to let anything or anyone tell her who she is or define for her what kind of life she lives? Or the choices that she makes. But it's, I feel like this is where the beauty and the magic happens. Like, it's all here. It's all right here.
So beautiful. Like, it's rewarding because I work with women who are escaping survival mode. And it's this beauty and the switch of, you know, this is what happened to me. This is what I've been dealing with. This is how I've been dealing with it. To this is how I'm taking control over my life. This is how I'm showing up. It comes like the connotations attached to the past tend to be weighted with guilt and shame and discontent. And then when there is the opportunity to let that go and really fully step into that radical ownership, there is like this unapologetic air to it that I love to see, right? Like I love to see that switch that happens when we recognize how much control we actually have. And that's the thing about trauma. It convinces us that we don't have control.
Yeah.
And then that's why we end up in these spaces where we are essentially on autopilot. We are essentially in a state of fight and flight, often for no reason, because we literally just can't let go of what it is that we've been through. And this is why we're having these conversations. The residual impact of trauma, no matter how big or small it is, has a long and vast reaching impact on our lives. And if we are unaware of how that is showing up for us, we are literally giving our lives away. Like it, I don't know how else to say it. I want us to be able to take ownership. I want us to be able to confidently step into who we are, because that is when the collective change happens, simply because we're moving in a different space. We're moving in a different vibration, which then becomes highly attractive to others.
Yeah, and to everything we want.
Mm-hmm.
It's this magical, this phenomenon, really, to be honest, is the way that I look at it, is it's this inexplicable thing that happens, that when you become clear on who you are, what your boundaries are, what you're willing to accept, what you're not, and where you want to go, what path you want to walk, what career you want, what husband you want, it just shows up for you. It shows up. And often it shows up in ways that are absolutely inexplicable, which is why I call it magical, because it shows up for you in ways that version of you that only identified with the trauma could have never, would have never even allowed herself to imagine.
Mm-hmm.
And existing in this place, because I feel like this is my place, this is where I'm at, I'm in this reinvention phase right now, where I'm becoming so clear on what I want, and I am creating myself, is what I call it, because I get to choose. You know, there's the foundation. Yes, there's the foundational Louisa, but I get to build on top of that. The rest of the bricks that go up and the levels that I build are completely up to me. And so there's this thing that just keeps happening in my life where lately I've been having all of these small dreams, you know, like little dreams that we have along the way, along life and just our journey. It's these tiny little dreams that just keep coming true in ways that I could have never even planned for. But I know what I want now. I'm so clear about it to the universe every single day. Mm-hmm. And I exist in this space where who and what I want to create, if I don't already have it within me, if it's external, it's just a matter of time before it finds me, and I get to enjoy it, and I get to make it a part of my life in this beautiful, pure, because I feel like there's a lot of purity, like the energies, like a lot of purity, and the people around me now, because I cut everyone else off from that toxic and, you know, traumatic life that I had, because they refuse to see me as anything but my trauma. And I don't identify with that woman anymore. So we're, you know, but all these new people that I do accept, I accept into my life, are just this beautiful, pure energy. And that's what everything else is in my life. And I think that's the beauty of disrupting that survival mode. It's the beauty of creation. And in my own belief system, I believe we are here to create our lives. I think that's the biggest piece of art that we're ever going to do, is the way that we get to create and live our lives. And I feel like being in this reinvention phase is the beginning of being able to do that.
I agree wholeheartedly. This is where many, many locked doors become unlocked. The universe supports us in what we do. We just have to make that decision that we are doing it regardless of the circumstance. We are coming for what is ours. I've really enjoyed this conversation, Louisa. So tell the audience how they can find you online.
So they can find me on www.flyingupstream.com, and you will get a little bit of my bio there and all of the resources and information that I offer to be able to help people go within and find their own path.
I love that. All of that information will be in the show notes. So before we wrap up, give us one takeaway that the audience can action based on what we've talked about today.
I always say stop and listen. Listen to your inner self. I vouch for meditation, for that, you know, Buddha looking, sit, silent, stillness meditation, because I feel like when you are able to stop and listen in meditation, it offers you a sense of who you are so clearly without any noise. And I think it can become a little bit addictive too, because of the quietness and the peace that it brings. So I always say, start with 3 minutes, 3 minutes a morning before you get out of bed, before you grab your phone, before life starts, sit there with yourself for 3 minutes. If you don't feel comfortable closing your eyes yet, don't close your eyes, but just sit there and notice. Notice the thoughts, notice the feelings in your body, and really start there, because it is in our inner knowing, it is in knowing yourself, that we can start to affect the change that we need within ourselves to change our lives and the collective eventually.
I love that. Get to know yourself so that you can make change, change your life, change the collective. Thank you again, Louisa, for your time. Listeners, thank you for listening. And I just want to remind you, you were not built to break. You damn sure were not built to just survive. So disrupt the cycle, reclaim your life, and thrive on your own terms. And I'll see you next week.